It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
The Andy Kaufman of politics. Alex Stein, primetime, number 99. It's the Will Cain podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? Welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You can watch the Will Cain podcast on YouTube and Rumble. Andy Kaufman was a performance artist. He pointed out society's absurdity and earned along the way about as much as possible as you can imagine hatred. Alex Stein is earning hatred and love as he has appeared over the past several years at city council meetings across this country. He has also begun to appear on news shows like Tucker Carlson Tonight. He shoves America's absurdities into our face. Alex Stein is very funny. He's had numerous videos go viral. Perhaps you've seen him in his interaction with AOC. Maybe you've seen him in his interaction with trans drag queen story hour brunch, for example, in Texas. You may not have seen him, by the way, attempt to raise troops for the Ukrainian Foreign Legion or confront Ted Cruz face to face. Alex Stein has no fear. But he always has a smile. I was excited to get to talk to Alex Stein today. You should go check him out, by the way. His Twitter feed is AlexStein99, AlexStein99. He's also on Instagram. He's also on YouTube. He has a show called Conspiracy Castle. And in approximately 1 month, he will have a show debuting on The Blaze. You should follow Alex Stein, find his work, and see some of the most awkward moments in American political culture. But today, it won't be awkward. It will be fun as we hang out with Alex Stein.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Prime time, Alex Stein. What is this? Is this like a Deion Sanders tribute? Why number 99?
Okay, well, listen, you know this, Will. So I went to Highland Park High School. My high school quarterback was Super Bowl champion Matt Stafford. And even though I played defense, a couple times they would put me in an offense, and Matt Stafford overthrew me in the end zone. So I'm still actually mad about it, Will. So do not bring up my high school football career. It's very challenging. It's an ordeal that I, you know that movie, I forget it, where the guy didn't hit the home run, and then he did hit the home run, and his life was way better. So now I feel like my life is not as good because he overthrew me in the end zone. I forget the movie I'm referencing. But no, it's tough, dude. It's tough. And I was number 99 on the grind all the time since Highland Park High School, you know, right down the street.
A, I didn't know you were Parky. B, I didn't know you were Scotty. C, I didn't know you played with Matt Stafford. Now I feel like we're brothers. You can be Tucker Carlson's son. Now I feel like we're brothers. Okay, have you gotten the DNA test?
Will, we're already fighting. I'm already fighting because you're trying to take my dad's job. It's not okay. That's food off of my plate, Will. That's off of my plate. That's my inheritance you're taking away from me. So that's not okay. Luckily, I like you because you're a Cowboys fan and you used to, you know, go toe-to-toe with Stephen A. So I know you're a good man, and I know that you've, you know, I know you're on the right side of history, but still, you're taking food out of my plate, man. I'm trying to get cheese on my burger. My dad doesn't like the extra 60 cents they charge at McDonald's.
I'm taking nothing from the king. No one can. I simply try to do my best to fill in when he's gone. Hey, man, let's do this. Let's figure out where you came from, and I'm not talking about Highland Park. The first time, Alex, you hit my radar was during the pandemic, and I believe it was a city of Plano City Council meeting when you rapped about give me the vaccine in my vein. But I don't think that was your first foray into sort of confronting the idiocy, the insanity of America. How did primetime number 9 Alex Stein start?
Well, okay, so, you know, you're right. This is an alter ego. You know, there is like an Alex Stein that's kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not necessarily shy, but I think there's two people. My comedic hero is a guy named Andy Kaufman, Will, and Andy Kaufman would blur the line of reality and fiction. And what I started to notice with the pandemic, and even before the pandemic, is the way these politicians mock us. You know, they look us right in the face and they just, you know, they basically lie to us. Like a perfect example, I know we're telling my backstory, but right now the new thing is sudden adult death syndrome. Everybody's talking about sudden adult death syndrome, but they're not talking why, quizzer, what is that, you know, factor that could be increasing that. So my point being is the fact that these people mock us. When I started going to these city council meetings at the beginning of the pandemic, well, I was totally serious. I was very earnest. I was like, why are we shutting down the water fountains? You know, my dogs get water from there. How is that going to stop people from getting coronavirus? Why are you shutting down the bathrooms and then putting porta potties? How is that, you know, a better health, you know? And they looked at me like I was an idiot. Because these politicians are all self-righteous. They're the NPCs, the non-playable characters in the video game of life. You know, you try to get your controller and you're like, oh, I want you to feel sorry for me. Oh, I want to get your attention. They don't want to give you their attention. But when I started getting goofy, and the first video that I had that really went viral is I went up there after Texas passed the heartbeat bill, and all of a sudden, all these people, it's just disgusting and sick and disgusting. And you and I, you know, we're close in age. I'm sure you knew people in college that had an abortion. I knew people that had an abortion. I knew the people, the few girls that I knew that had one, it ruined their lives. It made them depressed. It made them, you know, a lot of them dropped out of college. You know, a lot of them became alcoholics. But after the heartbeat bill, I would see young kids protesting in downtown Dallas for abortion. I would see kids making TikTok videos about how much they love their abortion. Something that I knew people that got abortions that would never, ever do. So my point being is I went up there and I spoke and I said, I'm going to culture jam. I'm going to act absurd. I'm going to talk about how much I love abortion and how abortion's so great, this and that. And that was the first video that really went viral. Charlie Kirk shared it, Ben Shapiro, and they all shared it like it was real. They're like, who is this guy, this sick monster that wants abortions? And kind of that was like the springboard that started the Fauci ouchie, that started the prayers for Ukraine, that started this, you know, kind of meteoric rise, I guess you'd say, of culture jamming.
It has been a meteoric rise, and I think Ben Shapiro and Charlie Kirk can be forgiven for taking you seriously originally. I didn't know when I first saw, because let's talk about this term you've used, and I've heard you use it in the past, culture jamming. You are, I'm going to allow you to defend it or define it, but it seems to me what you're doing is you're simply taking what is no longer absurd, but rather what is mainstream, and hold it up to a mirror, just show it back to the mainstream.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And I don't listen. Barack Obama is the worst guy in the world. But what he did, he read a book called Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radical and Rules for Radicals. And in this book, you know, they talk about how mockery and humor is really the only way to break free. And I talk about this on Tucker's show. It's like we're on this constant, you know, main line from the mainstream media of trauma based mind control, just negative. How many people are dying? You know, Ukraine, pictures of people dying. It's like that dog commercial where they want you to adopt a dog and they show all the dogs that are going to get euthanized, and that's all that's done is to make you have this emotional response and put you in this fight or flight where you're like, oh my God, I gotta call and donate, I gotta do this. It's meant to make you feel so negative. So my point being is, once you can, the only way you can break people out of that is by using humor, is by mockery. And so you take the most absurd parts of our culture and you just nailed it. It's like putting up a mirror. It's like guys like this, Don Lemon, who says white supremacy is our biggest problem in America, married to a white guy. You look at Lori Lightfoot. She won't even do interviews with white journalists. She's married to a white woman. So you can just see the hypocrisy is so strong. It's almost impossible not to point it out because it's the big elephant in the room. So what I'm doing, I'm not the first person to go ever act goofy at a city council meeting, but I think I'm the first person to ever do it in a political aspect. And Will, I want to say this, the only reason I'm being successful, the only reason, because there was a time very recently, within 4 or 5 years ago, when Saturday Night Live was the funniest show. Every Monday, there was a viral video from that Saturday. Everybody shared it work. But now, because comedy is so politically correct, there is a huge void. And you have guys, leftists like Bill Maher, that are crushing it now. And even though he's as leftist as it gets, all he does is point out, why are more kids on gender reassignment surgery and hormones in Los Angeles compared to Cleveland, Ohio? You know, I mean, there's just small stuff where people are like, oh, that's good. The one sketch that Saturday Night Live has had that went viral in the past 2 years was a sketch making fun of the pandemic restrictions. So the only reason I'm being successful is because I'm trying to be like in the 90s when people were less politically correct in a world that has gotten so correct because everybody wants to be a victim.
Well, you know what's interesting about what you're describing in the realm of comedy, Alex, is it's what I encountered in the world of sports. And I think, and this is the first time you and I are meeting, I think you're being 100% authentic to what you actually believe. And I was and am 100% authentic to who I am. But at the same time I'm being authentic, I'm looking around the realm of sports and going, wow, the entire industry, much less the company where I work, has seeded well over 50% of the audience to me. The rest of these guys are dividing up, I don't know, 40% of the audience, meaning this race to see who can be the most woke, most recently, as illustrated by Jalen Rose. And I sat there and I thought, does everyone agree with that? I can just be authentic to who I am, and I can't believe sports, comedy, and every other aspect of popular culture has said, we'll ignore that. Whatever it may be, 50, 60% of America.
Well, Will, you know, another friend of mine, I'm not trying to name drop, but Jason Whitlock, and he's similar to you, too, where, you know, he actually has an opinion that doesn't go against them, you know, that goes against the mainstream agenda. And that's what they fear the most is guys like you, handsome, smart, articulate people that actually have a message. And I'm not making fun. Well, I mean, I'm not trying to kiss your butt. I'm not making fun of all the broadcasters, you know, Swagoo, all these guys. They're funny and stuff, but they can't articulate their message as well. All they can basically do is being a, you know, repeating of what they're basically told to say. So that's what they don't want. They don't want somebody that actually has a mind to speak on their own. And that's really why content stinks. That's why guys like Bill Maher right. is having success, because he speaks his mind. And I remember watching a thing, and I'm not as big a broadcaster as you, not even close, but I remember watching when I got a deal at Blaze. I'm about to have a show there. My point being is I was watching a thing with Larry King, and they said, Larry, you know, right before he passed away, what's, you know, your biggest advice for somebody that wants to get into broadcasting? He said, be yourself. And I think that really resonated. These people don't want to be themselves. They want to try to capitulate, and they want to tiptoe the, you know, political correctness line, and that doesn't work. And this is why I saw that, because I grew up loving Howard Stern. There was a time when Howard Stern was so great and so raucous and was the, you know, the wildest guy, but he would always make fun of Rush Limbaugh. But when Rush Limbaugh died, Rush Limbaugh was more controversial than Howard Stern at Rush's death, all because Rush Limbaugh was conservative. So that just shows you that, you know, if you speak against the mainstream media, if you go against the wokeness of the world we live in, you're more controversial than a guy that would throw bologna at girls' butt. I mean, that's how much we've lost the plot in society.
You know, and here's the fascinating thing. Those that are towing that part of the popular culture are actually not being authentic. I have found behind the scenes that the major motivating factor for most broadcasters, and the truth is for most human beings, is the desire to be liked. And the desire to be liked primarily by those you're most immediately surrounded by, so your colleagues. So if I was at ESPN, for example, and I said something to them that was controversial, and to me and to 60% of America I knew was not controversial, I risked being disliked, where it was easier and remains easier to say something that is increasingly insane, for example, that we should do away with Mount Rushmore, but you will be liked by your colleagues. And I'm here to tell you, I know personally that I can't speak to Jalen Rose specifically, but I can speak to many broadcasters who actually don't believe deep down the things they find themselves saying. They just want to be liked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's very obvious when you look at sports and you look at Leah Thomas, who swam on the men's team, University of Pennsylvania, swam on the men's team, ranked 457, then got to take gender hormone therapy, not even have gender reassignment surgery, get to change in the women's locker room, get to win multiple NCAA championships. And the media, oh, that's so good. We're gonna congratulate you. When really anybody based in reality realizes those 17 other women that made it to the NCAA championships, that spent every waking minute in a pool when they weren't in class, finally get to the top and have to lose to a biological male that has transitioned to a female. And the sports world is like, oh, this is so great. Let's just congratulate Leah Thomas. That's not okay with me, but that's where the people are, is they want to be liked. And this is the thing is, you know, your biggest fan is a stranger and your biggest enemy is somebody you know, close to you. And this is the problem, is when you try to impress everybody, and I'm sure you know this because you're a big broadcaster, you're never going to impress anybody. So you need to stop worrying about the opinions of strangers. And I've learned that, you know, more recently, that, yeah, I'm getting a lot of hate, but for every hateful message, I get 10 saying that it's great. So my point being is you can't please everybody. And trying to do that is a recipe for disaster.
All right, I want to go back to culture jamming and this idea that the only way you can, I think your word was, break the trance is by holding up the mirror to the absurdity of the culture. I live in Dallas. You live in Dallas. I remember, Alex, just a few months ago, this was so, I don't even know how to describe this, but it was just, it was very, very noteworthy that I would drive through downtown Dallas at night. And for those that have never been to Dallas, don't live in Dallas, Dallas is a skyline that has really embraced the neon. It's LED lights on every single skyscraper. And a few months ago, Alex, I don't know if it's still that way, but every single skyscraper, Reunion Tower, the ball at the top of Reunion Tower, I would say half of the skyscrapers in Dallas were blue and yellow. We're standing strong for Ukraine. And I'm not here to take a moral position in our conversation about what the United States position should be with Ukraine, but I find it fascinating that the entire acceptable position, the trance that you bring up, is that lower red, white, and blue, raise blue and yellow.
No, you're exactly right. They even said the FBI released the Betsy Ross flag as a hate symbol. You know, basically to these people, the American flag is a hate symbol. But you're in Dallas, and listen, I go to Bachman Lake every day, and I constantly see, immigrants getting let off. And I'm not anti-immigration. My point being is we've had 108,000 drug overdose deaths with fentanyl just this year. We have massive sex trafficking that's going all over this country. And then when these immigrants get bused to D.C., they say, oh, we want to declare a federal emergency. Well, that federal emergency is already happening here in Dallas. Yet these politicians want to give $80 billion to secure the border between Russia and Ukraine and don't want to do anything about the border between Texas and Mexico that affects your and I's life every single day. So this is the problem, is these people are globalists. They don't care about America. And I think it's very obvious when you see places like Texas that we understand we can take in the immigrants. You don't see Governor Abbott declaring a federal disaster. But Mayor Bowser in D.C., she gets literally 1,000 immigrants and says, oh, well, let's call in the Federal Reserve or the National Guard. So it's the hypocrisy that these people care more about Ukraine and that's more important than the American flag on your shirt is really, we're in the clown world. We're in the upside down world.
Okay, so now let's go into some of your content. Back to the trance for a moment. A lot of the places you've been, by the way, Alex, and that you've done some of these pieces of performance art, for example, Plano. And you and I know, by the way, not every Texas city, and really honestly, not every Texas suburb is conservative. But they're not also the far left. So, for example, I'm curious... Mm-hmm. For example, Plano, you show up there. That's historically a very conservative town. I don't know where it stands today with immigration from California. But I'm curious, you're talking to people in many situations that I would have to think agree with you. What is the reaction that these quote unquote leaders have to your performance?
Well, it's fear and anxiety, even in the conservative sides, except for one city, Colleyville. Colleyville, the mayor and their city council invited me to come speak. They're huge Tucker Carlson fans. After I was on Tucker, and during the meeting, I went and I spoke and I sang some song about Red Pill Colleyville. They stopped the meeting and took pictures of me. So, yes, you're right. There are some people here in this conservative state that like it because, some people have a sense of humor. But most of these politicians, whether it's Plano, even Plano, they changed the public meeting where they would, put the camera real tight so you couldn't see the audience. And then, there's places like Mesquite where they've literally cut off the microphone so you couldn't hear what I was saying. So you would consider Mesquite conservative. So my point being is politicians don't want to risk being embarrassed. Denton is a place that's like incredibly liberal, but they have a conservative mayor. So he lets it go on. But all the city council members, I know a city council member, they hate it. So really, you're going to get universally disliked because these people take their job so seriously. When really, they're voting on how long a sidewalk should be in front of a restaurant or if an arcade can open up. Their jobs really aren't that big of a deal. So, yeah, they don't like it when I come in there and, make a mockery of the meeting.
So what I find fascinating about this, and it's not just what you've revealed, but we saw parents, for example, in Loudoun County, Virginia, reveal this as well. I just can't imagine that all of these city council members are going home and going to the backyard barbecue and going, I can't wait to get some of this trans ideology into the schools. But I'm sure many are, but I can't imagine all of them. But their reaction to parents that speak out and their reaction to you, I think reveals just like you give someone a little bit of power. You give someone a little bit of esteem and authority, and they do not want to be embarrassed. What's the worst, by the way? Who's the worst? Where did you receive the worst reaction?
Well, probably Mesquite is the one where it's worse, but I want to tell this story. So I spoke at a meeting at the beginning of the pandemic. A lot of them were online. So I've spoken Portland. I've gone after Ted Wheeler. You know, Ted Wheeler let their federal building burn down for 63 days and nobody got arrested. But in Hawaii, I did a thing where they were closing down a road that was a main access road for tourists. And a lot of people were going to lose money because these tourists couldn't go to their part of the town. And I said, oh, you know, this stupid rock hit my car. And then the tow truck driver slept with my wife. I'm so mad at you Hawaiians. And I got really mad at him. It was a very serious meeting, and they all got so mad at me. And then Fox 4, their local Fox, covered it, and they go, and when they covered it, they asked the guy that was running the meeting. He wasn't the mayor, but he was, you know, some city official. He's like, well, I don't want to give him clout, but once he did that in the meeting, it took away a lot of the, you know, stress in the meeting. We were able to come to an agreement and it helped the meeting. So that's what people don't realize is I take the arrows. This ultra serious meeting, people are scared. They're in front of the mic. They're like, I'm blah, blah, blah. They're nervous. So when I go and I act like a goofball and I take all that negative attention, it actually helps the other speakers because I'm like a class clown. I've always been a class clown. And everybody likes a class clown. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody likes it when your class gets distracted because somebody acting like a goofball. So that, in that sense, it's actually, you know, very effective for the other people in the meeting, Will. And like I said, I haven't had that many bad experiences because on social media, your First Amendment right of freedom of speech does not exist. You say something on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you're cut off. But in these public meetings, as long as you don't really say any, you know, vicious cuss words, you can say whatever you want, literally. So it's one of the last places on earth where we still have freedom of speech or in these public meetings.
Were you the class clown? Did you get in trouble a lot back at Highland Park?
Of course. I mean, I was in AP, ISS. I graduated. Oh, man. I was constantly in the principal's office. They had my dad's number on speed dial. But that's neither. And I graduated from LSU. You'll like this. So I graduated from LSU. You had to have a 2.5 GPA. I had a 2.6, barely. And I'm the only person I got caught drinking in Tiger Stadium to get suspended from LSU for drinking for a semester for sneaking in alcohol in the stadium. I'm the only person ever. From LSU.
Right, because no one does that in Baton Rouge.
Exactly. I'm just a dumb enough idiot that got caught. That shows you a little bit about my... I'm an attention target. I have a target on my back constantly, and so it's a good thing and a bad thing now that I'm starting to create content, and now, you know, it's good to create attention, but earlier in my life, a lot of the attention that I get has not always been very positive.
Well, you have... Okay, in my estimation, you have two main weapons, but you have one primary weapon. Your primary weapon is your smile. The entire time you do almost everything you do, you are smiling. And you know, I do wonder, it seems real, but it also seems like to me, you know this. What I'm saying to you is something that you know. And if you keep smiling through these confrontations, you can't lose.
Yeah, well, no, you have to smile because you can't, you know, you can't like go down to them and be mad. And I know some guys that are like in the conservative media kind of do what I do, where we confront a lot of these protesters and stuff. And when you do it in a negative way, it just doesn't come across. And this is my actual personality. I am jovial. I do like to smile. Like, so, you know, that it's really a weapon. I almost think it's a way to disarm people. And at the same time, it's like when you're matching, when these people have this, like, I'm all about vibrational energy. You can kind of feel the energy of a room or energy of a person. These people are like really low vibrational, you know? So when I smile, I try to be a little high vibrational, bring them up to my level where we're happy, we're having a good time, instead of like the, because you know, the negative, you know, misery loves company. So you go there mad and they're mad, it's just, you're just going to get more mad. But if they're mad and I'm smiling, maybe I can raise them up a little bit and we can get on the same level.
Okay, so your second weapon is you seem, and I'd like to think that you and I share this quality, but you've put yourself in very different situations than me. You mentioned, I'm never afraid of a confrontation when it comes to someone like Stephen A. Smith or when it comes to a face-to-face mm-hmm. debate. You're not afraid of a confrontation that you know is going to end poorly. So yeah. You go into this knowing this is going to end poorly. And I'm not talking about taking an L. I'm talking about being escorted out by law enforcement. So, you know, you just had an interaction with pro-abortion protesters at the state capitol in Austin. But here's... Mm-hmm. But here is what I'm really interested in, okay? And I was really interested in your confrontation with Ted Cruz. So mm-hmm. what I noticed there, and I appreciate about you, and, you know, you're a fan of Tucker, and as am I, and so that means in a lot of ways we're going to share a lot of, I imagine, ideas, that this yeah. isn't a partisan enterprise. This is an idea-based enterprise, and you weren't afraid to take it to Ted Cruz.
Well, listen, if you really want to get my political viewpoint, there's some stuff that I'm pretty, you know, socially liberal about. I think that we should have some sort of form of socialized medicine where why does insulin cost, you know, $170 in Texas and $7 in Mexico? But my point being is with Ted Cruz and these politicians, I'm anti-establishment. Ted Cruz has just voted to give $80 billion to the Ukraine. And on top of that, I know you're in Dallas. When we had the disaster where the grid failed, my whole entire garage flooded. My mom's whole entire house flooded. I mean, she just had an apartment, but it flooded. It was a really bad deal. I had to put her in a Holiday Inn. It was like $200 a night for 7 nights. I mean, it kind of bankrupted me, paying nearly $2,000 at that time. I was like, oh man, this is so stressful. And then I see Ted Cruz is going on a Cancun vacation, and I could that never sat well with me. And that's he's allowed to go on his vacation, but at that time, you think you maybe should have scheduled it a week later. But my point being is that this is the thing: is we got to call out these politicians, because what happens is Will, we are being ran by multinational corporations. These same corporations like Halliburton, Pfizer, Apple Computers, they don't just operate here in America. They operate globally. So what they want to do is they want to destabilize America so they can get legislation that benefits them in China. You look at Foxconn Studios in China, where Apple makes their iPhones. They pay their employees and work them so hard that they literally have suicide nets outside of this factory. And when the employees ask for more money, instead of giving them more money, they build bigger nets. So these corporations are the ones that are able to donate to these political action committees that are able to get in these politicians' ears. They don't care about us. Look at this Inflation Reduction Act they just passed. That's going to bill people that are making $30,000. It's going to make us poorer during a time of massive inflation and a recession. That's called a stagflation. It couldn't be a worse time to add more taxes to the American people. Why? It's because that's not a conspiracy. They're trying to destabilize the middle class. And we need to build the middle class up. But in this country, they're literally trying to delete it. And guys like Ted Cruz, he can moan and cry all he wants. He's letting it happen. It's happening right under his nose. So we really need to hold politicians on both sides accountable, because when you have a person that you think is on your side and they do something bad, it's like getting cheated on by your wife. If you cheat, my girlfriend cheats on me, that's bad. But if your wife cheats on you, that's much worse.
So you just became infinitely more interesting. Give me a little bit of runway here, Alex, because it's interesting for me. I also find myself fluid. I definitely have conservative principles and values, and to my core, I believe in free markets and small government and traditional values. But I think over the past decade, can't help but have noticed that the American, both governmental and more importantly, cultural society has left behind the common man, the middle class. You bring up China. We exchanged free trade and cheap plastic goods for meaning, purpose, and jobs. And, you know, I'm from actually an hour north of Dallas. I'm from Sherman, Texas, which is having a rebound, Alex, as we speak, because Texas Instruments is going to invest in thousands of jobs. But for almost two decades, it's been the opposite. I saw plant after plant after plant in that town close. And at the same time, you see, for example, Donald Trump move union workers over toward his America First platform. I think you're absolutely right. Left or right, people are displeased with American medicine. I don't think traditional concepts of left and right apply to where we are in the world today, when, as you point out, we have multinational corporations and giant big tech companies inhibiting free speech. It just doesn't work anymore to think of it like it did in the 90s or the 80s. And so the fact that you tell me, I'm for socialized medicine, I'm not really a traditional, let's say, Republican, is infinitely interesting, because I don't know that a traditional Republican actually applies to modern day America.
Well, really, it's because I'm a populist, and more people probably are populist than they'd agree. But this is the problem. We have a system of identity politics, whether it's the people on the left or the people on the right. And that's why all these people on ESPN, they're like, oh, well, I have to be vote blue no matter who. Yet they're all multimillionaires. I mean, Charles Barkley and them are all multimillionaires on TNT. You know, they want less taxes. You know that they probably have a lot of conservative values, but they don't even know what conservative values are. They don't even understand what less government is. And I'm not calling them dumb. I'm just saying they don't even realize who they're cheerleading for, because they think think, oh, well, right, say, you know, left side, good team, you know, right side, bad team. And it's not that way. We should not pick teams. This is not the NFL. You know, there is a nuance to our system, and we need to have a populist agenda, because in my opinion, I think social services are good. I'm not saying we should get rid of social services. Hey, do you think I don't want to help out people that are poor or destitute? Of course I want to help them out. But at the same time, I don't want people to, you know, use that system to come here and become a welfare state, knowing that they can get free handouts. So I just think there's a little nuance that we should help people that need help, but we should also help the middle class the most. And by hiring 87,000 more IRS agents that are going to cost $1 billion to go find $500 million in back taxes, to me, that doesn't make sense. It's like, what? So we need
from
less
the middle
government
class.
In the sense of, yes, that's
from
what I'm saying. So, yes, of course, literally, those are the ones that are paying the taxes. And, you know, even in there, I think they gave a corporate tax exemption for the biggest corporations. So, listen, we have a system that is so screwed up that is not here for the people. And you look at Texas, there was a time when you know, we're in the Silicon Prairie. Dallas is lucky in that we have so many tech companies coming here. And we are basically, you know, you have like Silicon Valley, you kind of have the East Coast. But Texas and Dallas, the DFW area, we're always going to have tons of businesses, Cisco. We're going to constantly be growing, but that's not the case all over America. And these smaller towns, you're talking about Sherman, you talk about Longview, Tyler, they're having a resurgence, but we have enough industry to pump all these people up, but we've given it all to China.
Yes.
So that's
yes.
The problem is that we've outsourced what makes America great. The Industrial Revolution is what made America great, but we are outsourcing all this in order to build the pockets and line the pockets of these corporations. We need to line the pockets of the middle class, Will, and that's not conservative or leftist. I want leftist people in the middle class to be able to go on a vacation. I want leftist people to be able to buy a new car and do whatever they want to do. I just want the middle class to grow instead of shrink.
Hear, hear. Let's go through a few favorites really quickly. Okay, I'm not even going to waste time on the fact that clearly your favorite football team is the Dallas Cowboys. Who was your favorite Dallas Cowboys?
Well, let's talk about the Cowboys. I had to cut you off real quick. Okay, because I know this is your show. And I'm the biggest diehard Cowboys fan. And, you know, we were younger. They were so good in the 90s. But, you know, they haven't won, even been to an NFC Championship game in the past 26 years. As a matter of fact, the Jacksonville Jaguars have been more AFC Championship games than the Cowboys have been to NFC Championship games. And I want to say, oh, I love the Jones family so much, even though he has a secret daughter. I actually kind of like a secret daughter. I wish he'd call me. But forget about the Jones' secret daughter. What I'm saying is, 26 years, we can't even go to an NFC Championship game. Jerry Jones fires Jimmy Johnson after he wins a Super Bowl. Will the Cowboys ever, this is my question to you as the expert, will the Cowboys ever win a Super Bowl while Jerry Jones is still in charge?
Okay, I've got 3 points to make to you. You know, you go through life and you ask yourself, are you an optimist or a pessimist? And I don't even know if there's a constant to that answer. But the Dallas Cowboys reveal to me that I am an optimist, because every single year I renew hope. I'm not Stephen A. Smith's character of the Dallas Cowboy fan, which is, we're going to win it all. But I think objectively at who they are, what they have, and I think they're going to be good. And so therefore, you're in the running. You have a shot. So the question that you're asking me is, will they ever? Every year I think there's a chance. Then I go to number two, which is Jerry Jones, and for that matter, Mark Cuban as well. They satisfy my basic requirement for owning a team that I pledge allegiance, and that is they care. I truly think they do care. This isn't the Cincinnati Bengals or the San Diego Chargers, Los Angeles Chargers, where the ownership group doesn't care enough to invest. They care. I think he wants to win a title, and therefore you earn some allegiance. But then third, look, man, I'm also not illogical. I look at constants, right? As you point out, 26 years, we've changed head coaches, offensive coordinators, quarterbacks, defensive coordinators. Every single element of the team has been interchanged except for one, the ownership. And there is no doubt this is a failed franchise over 26 years. What's the constant? The ownership.
Well, listen, and I like the Jones family. I think he does deserve to be in the NFL Hall of Fame for sure. I think he revolutionized the game. But I wish they would go sign a free agent or two. You know, they only sign their own players that they draft, which is okay. They gave a running back $1 billion when, you know, they say running backs are dime a dozen. And I'm not saying I don't like Ezekiel Elliott. And I love Dak Prescott. I'm a huge Dak Prescott. But they could have signed him at the beginning of his career for a pittance, for nothing. And they could have signed him for a long term. They waited to the last minute where Dak had all the leverage. So I'm just kind of like, what the heck? Why would y'all had to It's just like there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. But yes, I think this year they got a division with no other quarterbacks in it. I mean, you look at Daniel Jones, you look at the Eagles don't have a quarterback. Washington doesn't have a quarterback. I think they win the division. Now, if we get in the playoffs, as long as we stay healthy, and that's the other thing, is that's one thing in the NFL. Whoever is healthiest at the end of the year usually has the best chance. So I don't know though. I look at Tampa Bay with Tom Brady. They signed Kyle Rudolph and Julio Jones. Why don't the Cowboys sign Kyle Rudolph and Julio Jones? You know, why don't they do some of this stuff? Get frustrated, Will.
Now we're hurting at receiver. Okay, quick hints. Yeah. I want to know your favorites. Favorite Dallas Cowboy of all time?
Of all time? I mean, gosh, this is a difficult one, but probably maybe either Dat Nguyen. I love Dat Nguyen because he was an undersized middle linebacker. I just love Dat Nguyen. You know, he played his heart out, and, you know, he was undersized. I like the underdog. But I'd have to go with Deion Sanders, though, if I'm talking about, like, awesome.
Prime time.
Deion Sanders. Yeah, of course.
Prime time.
But Dat Nguyen, you know, under the radar, Dat Nguyen was my favorite. He was such a stud for such a, you know, small guy. He really kicked butt.
Favorite primetime number 99 Alex Stein confrontation?
Oh my gosh. Well, it hasn't happened yet, but probably the best one is so I had a comedy show. I was doing a charity event for Robert Kennedy's Children Health Defense, and I didn't realize that these people in New York City, they really didn't like me. They had a protest there. And so you know, I go to the comedy show and I'm thinking I'm all cool. I'm outside, you know, people are taking selfies with me. And so I go inside the comedy club, I'm sitting in the green room, and somebody says, "Alex, there's protesters outside." What are you talking about? I've never been protested. What the heck? I go out. Somebody takes a video of him. I'm like, oh my God, there is protesters. There's like about 15 protesters. So my favorite one is I just did a set at a sold out comedy show. And I said, guys, the better comedy show is going to be, after I said my last show, the better comedy show is going to be outside. Come watch me confront these protesters. And I went out there and they're all soy. They're all, you know, very low energy with their little signs. It says Alex Stein stinks or whatever it said. So that confrontation, I'm ripping their signs. I'm in New York City, the most epic city in the world. That was my favorite confrontation. And that's the other thing, is that's what's wrong with me. I ate paint chips as a kid, or I was dropped on my head like Chris Farley, because I love the confrontation. Well, it's like I almost have to go to it. And I went to LSU and I got beat up. I'm not saying I've won every fight I've been in. So I'm saying if I survived LSU, I can survive these other confrontations. It kind of, I'm war torn. I'm ready to go.
I thought you might say AOC. I thought you might say the trans activist.
AOC's the biggest. Okay. No. I gotta say this. I gotta clarify this for your listeners, because I got crushed by Bill O'Reilly and a lot of these people on the conservative side. And let me clarify with the AOC thing. First of all, with AOC, she's the same person that wants to get drag queen story time for children. Loves it when these teachers have pornographic material. She's the one getting mad at conservatives for trying to get it out of their school boards. And at the same time, she cheerleads sex work. So when I said, oh, I'm going to go say you're a big booty Latina to AOC, it wasn't even that I was trying to be perverted. I was trying to culture jam, because she says there was a famous picture where it was her eating at a diner in Miami outside, not wearing a mask, and her boyfriend's foot. Everybody's making fun of her boyfriend's foot. She's like, everybody sexualizes us and talks about how I look, and they talk about my good looks. And, you know, she says everybody wants to date me. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go try to date her. I'm going to go hit on her. And the only reason that she had such a response when I said big booty Latina is, A, Riley, her fiance, was right there and didn't say anything, didn't even say, hey, bud, you know, cut it out. So it made him look bad. And on top of that, AOC is a 32-year-old multimillionaire ex-bartender who's been catcalled before, but wants to use it as political leverage to play the victim. So, of course, that had the biggest effect, because she went in and then voted for 3 hours and immediately came out and said the rioters on January 6th were led in by the Capitol Police. And say what you will about January 6th. There are some people, some bad actors there, but if you really thought the QAnon shaman in a spike helmet was going to go into the Capitol building and decertify the election, you're dreaming. You're dreaming. The guy is mental. He couldn't do that. So these people want to say, oh, it's worse than 9/11. Say whatever you will. Nothing's as bad as 9/11. And the fact that they compare it to 9/11 is very disrespectful to the victims and the families of 9/11, in my opinion.
You may have answered this question earlier with Andy Kaufman, favorite comedian.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Kaufman, for sure. I really liked Patrice O'Neill, before he died. He was great. And you know, I take a lot of, like, what I do when I'm on the microphone and kind of the shock jock style of, like, you know, Opie and Anthony and Howard Stern. But it's crazy now. You know, I said this earlier, Rush Limbaugh is more controversial. So I really like Rush Limbaugh when it comes to broadcasters. And, of course, my biological father, Tucker, is my favorite. But when it comes to just comedians, though, I think Andy Kaufman was the best, because this is why, too. At the end of his career, he got kicked off Saturday Night Live and was like universally loathed because he was wrestling women. And during that time, he was actually doing a political statement because women wanted to be taken, you know, equal. That was a big, you know, feminism wave. And so he was kind of showing, like, kind of tongue in cheek, oh, well, if they want to be equal, then I'll wrestle him, the intergender champion of the world. And so he foreshadowed a lot of this now where there's men like Leah Thomas who gets to the transition is competing against women in the women's category. So there should be an intergender category. If you're trans, you know, if you're 18 years old, that's great. If you're a young kid, I don't think you should be on hormone blockers. But I'm saying if you're an adult, I'm okay with an adult choosing to live whatever lifestyle they want. But they shouldn't get to compete against a biological female. So they need to have an intergender league for all of these trans athletes, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. He was way ahead of his time. All right, last two. I have to follow up on this. You got beat up at LSU? You talking about like by Crimson Tide fans, by Razorback fans? Who are you talking about? Your own friends, LSU students?
Well, I mean, you would go see at LSU, they still had the sink or swim nights where you pay like $15 and it's all you can drink. So, yeah, those nights, I think I got punched once or twice from dancing on, you know, you might dance next to a guy's girlfriend a little close. And then, yeah, you know, we'd go to every SEC city. I mean, Athens, Georgia, I think I got stomped out too. I don't know. I don't think there's a city where I haven't been. I mean, when I'm a tall guy, I'm 6'3", I'm loud mouth. I mean, you know, it's hard for me not to get somebody crack me upside the head. I mean, you see this right here. This is from a beer bottle. I got, you kind of see my Harry Potter scar. That was my freshman year at LSU. I got hit in the head with a beer bottle and busted my head open. So, yes, and I don't drink or do drugs anymore, but this is why. My very good friend, and I'm not even AA, but my very good friend, it's not trying to get sad. So I work for the TV show Cheaters. We film it here in Dallas, and I signed an NDA.
I remember Cheaters.
Yes, so I can only say so much, but it's the most real show ever in the history of TV. Everything else on TV is fake, but this show is 100% real. My point being is, I have to kind of say that. The host of a guy named Clark Gable, his grandfather was Clark Gable from Gone with the Wind, and Clark was a great guy from California, had the biggest drug tolerance I've ever seen, like had a bunch of doctors to prescribe him pills. Like, I'm just saying, I went to college, well, college, I knew people that partied hard. This guy partied the hardest. Well, after we're done filming, he ran out of whatever pills he would take, I don't even know, and went and bought some street, like hydrocodone or Vicodin or something. And had fentanyl in it.
Took it,
woke up dead. I mean, I'm not trying to say that to be funny, but with his wife and 19-month-old baby. And the reason why I bring that up, and that's why I stopped drinking, I stopped doing everything, is because this guy had a high tolerance. He was not just some, you know, little kid at an Astroworld Travis Scott concert and tried a drug and died. This guy was an extreme user, you'd say. And he died, and that just blew my mind. And then you'd hear stories of, like, people doing drugs and having fentanyl and dying. So that's when I was like, I'm done. I'm done drinking. I was really depressed. Really sad. And they said, Alex, you're going to be the next host of the show. They said, Alex, you're going to be the next host. And then when it came time, April of 2020, to start filming, they picked a DJ out of New York, a 52-year-old guy, kind of an affirmative action pick. And that's when I started creating content. And it was the greatest thing. At that time, I was so sad I didn't get the job. Then I started creating my show. And next thing you know, 2 years later, I got a show coming out on The Blaze. And I'm, you know, a lot. A lot bigger than I could have been hosting a stupid reality show.
Hey, what an awesome story. Not the part, obviously, about your friend. How that highlights the problem with fentanyl is so tragic. You would have been an awesome host of Cheaters. You would have been incredible. But my own career reflects that same kind of story. Jobs I lost out on that I thought were make or break led a few months later, maybe a few years later, to better opportunities. And not to be corny, but like the Garth Brooks song, I thank God for unanswered prayers. You know, you know, it's clearly led you to better things, man. Okay, so we'll end it with this, your hometown. I guess it's not Matt Stafford. So your favorite Highland Park Scotty. Kershaw.
I would say Clayton. Clayton's the best, but of all Highland Park Scots, gosh, I mean, I guess I'd have to say of them all. I mean, I want to say Kershaw. He's a Cy Young winner. I'm trying to think of any other good athletes. Maybe Doak Walker. I'll say Doak Walker is my favorite Scotty. There you go. Just
running
to be
back
contrarian.
Trophy named after him. There you go.
Yes.
All right, Alex Stein, man, it's been great getting to know you. You complimented me several times about the level of my broadcasting. You're about to blow right by me and many, many people.
No!
Blowing up.
Will, you're the future of Fox News. Shut up! No, you shut your mouth. That's why I'm kissing your butt because literally, forget Fox and Friends. It's going to be Will Kane and Friends or whatever new stuff. And this is the other thing. It's like you know, ESPN. I'm sure you were just talking about how one door closes and this and that, yada yada yada. You know, you don't know what opens up. But I think that you have this avenue now where people don't want to be political. Like they don't want to talk about politics because they were raised, you know, not talk about religion or politics. But you being in the political spectrum can talk about the wokeness in sports. You can talk about, you know, the trans stuff. You can talk about everything. So I think for you, as talented as a broadcaster you are, it's better that you're talking about this instead of talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, fourth quarter defense. Like, you know, you can still talk about that. No, I'm just saying this suits your skills even better because you can still bring up the wokeness in sports. The fact that LeBron James has never read past the first page of a book or whatever we want to talk about.
He knows how to hold it in front of a camera.
He's really good at holding the biography, but I don't know how good he is going to chapter two. My point being is I really, you are the future of broadcasting, and that's not just kissing your butt because you are not afraid, and you've been at places where you could have, like, you know, capitulated to the mob, and you didn't. So I think that you have integrity and character, and that's what's going to separate you from the rest.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm very flattered, and I'm excited to watch you and where you're headed and to get to know you better. Alex Stein, you're the best. Thanks, man. There you go. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Again, he's on Instagram, Primetime Stein. He's on Twitter, AlexStein99. He's on YouTube, and he will soon be on The Blaze. I'll see you next week.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by founder and executive director of Power the Future, Daniel Turner, for a look at how we can advocate for a cleaner earth while strengthening U.S. energy independence. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com.